Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee, and we've got our usual co-host, Jazz Stunner, with me, and I'm so grateful that he's always here with me, because I don't know what else I should say, apart from giving Melbourne a hard time. Jazz, how are you, mate?
I'm really good. I'm drinking some Corona, mate.
Oh, okay. So you're spreading the love. That's nice. But everything else is good on your side?
Yeah, just busy with the kids, mate. School, teaching. That's another thing we are learning these days, how to teach kids from home.
Remote learning. And that's actually a good point. And I think, you know, our guest today actually on the show with us is a big advocate in university. For a change, actually. And you know, I'm sure he'll teach us a little bit about remote learning as well, given his current experience that everything has to be done remotely. But I guess without any further delay, we've got Peter Koulizos from the Adelaide University. And I think at the moment your title is the Program Director of the Master of Property at Adelaide University. Is that correct, Peter?
Yes, it is, David. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And welcome to the show.
Jazz, how are you?
Really good, Peter. Thanks for coming on the show. I've watched you a lot while I've been building my property portfolio, so you certainly did help me to help build part of it, for sure.
Whereabouts have you bought, Jazz? Which suburbs?
In Adelaide. I've got one in Adelaide. That's in Christie's Beach.
Oh, smart man. I've got one there as well. Very yeah. Good.
Hopefully, you're not the next door, then we can do the subdivision together.
Very good. Very good. I've already done my subdivision and built them, so I'm good.
Well, then you can help me do it, I guess.
Okay.
So you have also written a few books, Peter. I think one I've got in my hand, Property versus Share, which, like I said, I never knew you wrote it till this morning, which is funny. And then the Top Australian Suburbs. And then there's another one that you are working on, which, what was the name for that one? Or you haven't decided?
We haven't worked out a name for it yet, but it's actually based on a case study of a subdivision and development in Christie's Beach in Adelaide. So it's there's two of us writing it. So the other person is writing it as a diary, and then I'm coming in with like the expert tips as to what went well, what didn't go well, and some lessons to be learned from it. So the actual house itself should be finished by the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So the book should be out early next year.
That's awesome. I'll be keen to check it out once it's there.
Very good.
I think you'll find it helpful with your upcoming subdivision and development project, Jazz.
Yeah.
Learn from the best.
All right. So, Peter, this episode, the podcast itself is about investing, and there's a lot of investors that are listening to this show, right, and others as well. But we wanted to focus a little bit about, before we go into the investment side, a little bit about the macro environment. I mean, Corona is one thing that it's there. There's nothing that can be done about it. I think the leadership has done a pretty decent job so far over there personally. But it has got obviously a lot of economic impacts at the same time too. And that's whether you look at the stock market or the property market and you look at some of these numbers, it's just they're just tanking, which is obvious. And the unemployment rate is shooting up too. What is your view on the macro environment currently and where this is headed?
So I think still at the minute there's a little bit of panic, maybe not so much in the share market, which reacts a lot quicker than the property market. But in the property market, it's still a bit of a shock. The fact that we don't have auctions as per normal. We don't have open inspections as per normal. Yes, you can have private open inspections, but number one, that takes a bit more organising. And number two, the person inside the house, let's assume that they're a tenant, has to be, you know, willing to have other strange people in their house, which is a bit hard during these COVID-19 times. And there are some people that are panicking and think that they need to sell their property very quickly, but you know, if the bank's giving you a six-month holiday and interest rates are 2 or 3%, like even if unfortunately you lost your job, there is no need to sell either your own home or an investment property right now. Let's see what the banks do within the first 6 months and maybe they might extend it, who knows, but there is no need to panic.
Right.
The fundamentals are still there. Like if we look at the fundamentals, say, in very early March or late February, you know, nationally we could say demand was good and supply was a little bit below demand because property prices were going up. They were going up higher in, say, Sydney and Melbourne than they were in maybe Adelaide or Brisbane, but the property fundamentals were still good. So I think it'll be a steep dip, but then it'll also be a steep incline as well.
It'll be
more a V shape. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Now, there are some of the economists like Shane Oliver and Chris Gray, I think. I'm not sure about Chris Gray, but Shane Oliver definitely. Oh, yeah, Louis Christopher.
Louis Christopher.
And we did discuss this on the podcast previously with another guest. I think it was Roger. They have predicted it could tank anywhere between 20 to 30%, right? What are your thoughts on that? Do you think we'll see that current kind of a steep decline, not specific to the Adelaide market, to nationally we are talking about over here?
That is not going to happen. And like famously Associate Professor Steve Keen forecast that property prices were going to drop 40% and he lost the bet, I'd be more than happy to have a bet with anyone who thinks that property prices will drop by 30% nationally. Because, I mean, I haven't gone as far back as the Great Depression, but ever since the Great Depression, whether it was the GFC, a recession, World War II, whatever it might be, Australian property prices have never dropped that far in modern history. And like I said before, the property fundamentals and many of the economic fundamentals are still sound, except for what will be a very steep increase in unemployment. Like everything else is still pretty good. Like Australia was the model for the rest of the world, especially so far as, you know, a period without a recession is concerned. But, you know, we were right up there so far as advanced economies were concerned and how we were running our economy. So far as the property market is concerned, a lot of these people that think that property market's going to drop by 30% think that our Australian property is overvalued. There is no doubt that Australian property is expensive, but it is not overvalued, because if you consider property around the world, most people's homes are apartments. In the major cities in Europe or Asia, most people live in small apartments. In Australia, 70% of the population lives in detached houses on their own block of land in major capital cities, which are on the coast. You put those four things together, and of course, property prices are going to be relatively expensive. I can't see a drop of more than 5 to 10% nationally. I think that the city that will do the worst is Hobart, because Hobart has been riding the wave with a lot of attention from interstate people and in particular short-term accommodation. But with the virtual collapse in Airbnb, and I'm sure it's only going to be short-term, that plus COVID-19 is going to have a much bigger impact on the Hobart market, which is also smaller. So it feels these sorts of things quicker, and it also impacts them stronger than, say, a Sydney or a Melbourne or, you know, one of the other major capital cities. But 5 to 10%, assuming that in 4 weeks' time restrictions are relaxed, that doesn't mean, you know, we go to life as per normal, but assuming restrictions are relaxed, people can start going back to work, unemployment and underemployment starts to ease, I think it's going to be a very short-lived 5 to 10% drop. And the reality is, if you don't have to sell your property within the next 1 or 2 months, you wouldn't even notice the property prices drop 5 or 10%.
Yeah, that's the beauty of this market, because it's not that liquid market. So the changes, I mean, that kind of increase or decrease, it doesn't really impact over the short period like this one. Do you see this to be a 1930 kind story, or it won't be anywhere near that?
The Great Depression was brought on by economic and financial woes. This has been brought on by a health crisis. And, you know, interest rates are really low. Inflation is really low. Before this, unemployment was really low. So, you know, we were tracking along quite nicely. And we're not going to get straight back to tracking along quite nicely very quickly. But, you know, none of the long-term economic fundamentals should change that significantly because of COVID-19. Things will improve slowly, some things more quickly than others. But this is not Great Depression time. It'll be worse than the recession of the 90s, no doubt. It'll be worse than the global financial crisis. Well, Australia didn't even go into recession during the global financial crisis, thanks to some stimulus. And hopefully this stimulus, JobKeeper, JobSeeker, plus from the private sector, in particular the banks, with you can go to interest only, you can have a six-month holiday on your mortgage, is all going to help. But don't get me wrong. It's not like, you know, there is nothing wrong with the property market. Of course there is. But it is not doom and gloom.
Right. What about the bit that I'm really that I've started thinking lately is more about is the commercial market. To me, the fact that we are sitting on the Skype or Zoom, whatever tool we use for different recordings, right? That this is the new commercial real estate, and this COVID has just come in as a pin and blown the bubble or the balloon basically over here. How do you see the commercial real estate getting impacted, or you still think it to be the recovery will be similar to the residential kind of thing, or it won't get impacted at all?
Ever since I did my property degree many, many years ago, we were talking that technology was going to change the commercial real estate market and there'll be less need for commercial space. Well, that never eventuated, but I think it might now, because the whole world has had a go at getting people to work from home. And I think employers will see that, you know, I don't know how productivity is going to go, but I'm sure employers will see we are much better off paying for less office space and allowing our workers to work from home. Number one, it'll be better for us, the bottom line. Number two, it also gives our workers more flexibility. And a lot of young people now are interested in flexibility in the work situation. But it's not just that, Jazz. It's also the bricks and mortar retail, which was taking a hit before. Like, the internet was slowly closing shops anyway. And now with this COVID-19, I think it has put the nail in a number of coffins. The one part of non-residential real estate which I think will do pretty well will be industrial, that is warehousing, storing. So instead of going into the shop to go buy your stuff, you shop online and the delivery driver will go to the warehouse to get your stuff and deliver it to your door. But I do see a downturn in the commercial space so far as retail and office is concerned in the long term.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I don't think we'll see the commercial returns like we used to see in the future. I think the story will change over there, and the offices will be much more smaller. Returns may still be good on those offices, but the landscape itself will change.
Peter, I agree. What do you think of the WeWork, the likes of WeWork, those kind of workspaces? Do you reckon
they... Co-working, yeah. I think, was it WeWork, David, that is in administration or... Mm.
The IPO failed completely on that one. Yeah. I think the valuations came back down to $2 or $3 billion from 44, 45. Don't quote me on the numbers, but the number was ridiculously high.
I think co-working is going to grow from this. I actually had the fortunate experience of going to Portugal late last year with my property students. We did an international property tour in Lisbon, Portugal. And for most of the time that we were there, we worked in co-working spaces. And so I could see for myself all of these relatively young people with their laptops, not only saving money because they didn't have those overheads, but you could glance to your right or to your left and have a quick chat to somebody else. And there were some excellent synergies. Yeah. So I think co-working, which really hasn't gone ahead in leaps and bounds in Australia, this COVID-19 is going to act as a catalyst for that. Because, as I said, I've seen it for myself in real life, and it does work. The problem for people like WeWorks is generally they take the head lease over the building. And if everyone is forced to work from home, it's WeWork that takes the greatest risk. All those other people that were on, let's call it monthly tenancies, you know, for them there's not much risk. So I think that model might need to change based on our COVID-19 experience. But co-working, yeah, is where office buildings, if they can refurbish, they can extend their life rather than the traditional here is one firm in our one office space.
Yeah, I think that's already happening. As a matter of fact, I think Sydney CBD, if you can see a lot of the co-working, I mean, a lot of spaces which are traditional, you know, they were the traditional office type of fit outs, but essentially they're starting to lease by like rooms, let's put it that way, you know, for shorter term, 6 months, that kind of stuff. We've seen that before. Yeah. So yeah, definitely moving into that. Mm, okay. Yeah.
And there's an important point that you mentioned, Peter, it's the synergy that is being created, more and more startups coming out of that kind of culture, I think.
That's right. So in a traditional office, generally you're surrounded by people in the same business, but in a co-working space, you've got people from many different facets of business, maybe completely unrelated to your business, but, you know, there might be a connection there down the track. You know, even if it's something as simple, you know, you want to run an event, the person next to you runs a catering business, perfect. You know, completely unrelated, but for this particular activity, it works out very well.
And the two other things that it will end up doing, which will be really good for the, which will benefit everyone, is one, it will help with the climate change with all these cars on the road. That will disappear all of a sudden. The traffic will be gone.
Well, hasn't it been wonderful to see the global pictures of blue skies and fish in the canals of Venice? You know, that's just been, I mean, COVID-19 is a terrible thing, don't get me wrong, but I think there are some positives to what's been happening. And you're right, Jazz. Like we don't have to travel to work every day in our own cars. We can, as has been demonstrated right now, we can work from home. I don't have to fly to Melbourne to see you. David doesn't have to fly to Melbourne, so we're all in the same room.
Yeah.
You know, we're saving a lot on air pollution just by staying in our own, in this case, rooms and just Skyping.
Yeah, and plus the politics disappear as well to some extent, because when you're in a central room looking at each other and stupid politics that come into play, which I hate, absolutely. That's good, Peter. So we touched on commercial a little bit, the way it's going to get impacted, and maybe some of the important areas to look if you're looking in the commercial space is warehouses, and we both, David and I, completely agree. I think we've discussed this in the past. But with the residential side, so people, investors who are cashed up, or are starting their journey and want to use property as a wealth tool. In the past, it used to be you buy a property, you've got a title. As long as you've got a title, it will probably go up in value, right? But do you see the strategy to be changing in the future, and you should be looking at specific kind of properties? Or what's the future for residential like for investors who want to use this as a wealth creation tool?
Look, I think the basic fundamentals still apply, which means you need to buy the right property, and the right property means the older, the better. So if there's only one thing people remember from me being a guest on your podcast, is they are never, ever to buy an off-the-plan apartment. All right? Yes. So the older, the better. And a right property in the right location. Right location means the right suburb, generally an undervalued suburb close to the city or close to the water, in a nice street. Nice street means it's wide, tree-lined, and the street is lined with other appealing homes, which ideally are set back from the street. If you can get those basic fundamentals correct, then yes, if you just sit on it, then the property price should go up, and generally above the average for that particular suburb or capital city. But you could buy, let's say, a brand new apartment in the same street as, say, a lovely character or period style home, and not have anywhere near the capital growth, or maybe any capital growth compared to that period or character home in the same street, in the same suburb. So it's not just about location. Location is the biggest driver of capital growth. It's also about the type of property. You need to have some land, not necessarily a large block of land, because a 200 square metre block of land in, say, Yarraville in Melbourne or Erskineville in Sydney is going to be worth a lot more than a 2,000 square metre block of land on the outskirts of Melbourne or Sydney. So what you want is a decent is a valuable land component. And the reason I've said older is not just because they are architecturally appealing, it's because from an economic point of view, the house is almost depreciated to nothing. So most of the value is in the land. And when property is made up of two components, that is land and building, it's the land that appreciates in value, whereas the building depreciates in value. So property selection, Jazz, is very important.
Yeah. The type of fundamentals you should be looking at are still the same, more or less.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, it's very early days, but I think as we had several years ago, we're going to have a lot more international attention in Australia again. If you look at our performance, never went into recession after the GFC. Our response to COVID-19 has been some of the best in the world, right? There'll be a lot of people looking to Australia to think, Australia may not be a bad place to live, or if I'm looking for a safe place for my investment, maybe I'll go to Australia.
In fact, Roger, last week when we had him on the show, he said that the banking system in Australia is probably more safer than anywhere else in the world. And if he was to park his money in a bank, it will be probably Australian banks. So that's another, and that's the main pillar of the economy in Australia.
It is. And I know banks have taken a hammering, and in some cases it's been deservedly so. But like my classes are full of international students from all over the world. And when we talk about their property market or their banking system or their political system, you know, and compared to Australia, you know, we are certainly one of the leaders of the world when it comes to that.
Right. Well, one thing that makes me less and less personally bullish, less bullish about property, residential property than before, and I have discussed this with David as well, is the rates in Australia over the last few years have pretty much dropped to RBA rate, has pretty much not dropped to zero. 0.25 is to me zero, right? And that used to be a major, one of the major reasons for property prices to keep going up in the past, because we kept dropping the rate all the way from 17-20%, whatever the high was, right? So, but that is, there's no more bullets left to fire here. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, so it took property 15 years, that is the last 15 years, but up until then, it was doubling every 7 to 10 years. So up until, say, 2002, 2003, which was our last property boom, we've seen inflation decrease, interest rates decrease. So there is no reason why property prices should increase markedly. So, yes, property will still go up in value, but don't expect it to go up in value as much as it did when inflation was double-digit and interest rates were double-digit, you know, those days are gone. Like we talk about, the Sydney and the Melbourne market, not much, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and how crazy that was. Well, back in the late 1980s, I think it was 1987 and 1988, Sydney property prices went up 30% in, let's say, 1987. Then they went up another 30% in 1988, 60%, over 60% in 2 years. Yes, they dipped afterwards, but all these increases are relative. You know, 20% looked huge in Sydney because we hadn't seen that Sydney hadn't seen that for a long time, pre-Olympic Games. So this will be the new norm. Do not expect to see double-digit growth in residential property prices anymore. We might be surprised occasionally if a number of, you know, basic fundamentals all come together, but you need to prepare yourself for single-digit increases in property prices going forward.
So what is left for our generation and the next generation? You guys enjoyed your life having 10, 20%. why should we suffer? What mistake did we make?
Oh, I love it, Josh, because you can see me on Skype and I look just a little bit older than you, don't I, Skype? Just a little bit older than you, Josh.
Handsome than I. I'll give you that one.
So for all of you young ones that are whinging, all right, how about if you stop going out to eat and overseas holidays and save some money? All right.
David and I have been eating beans for the last 1 year. That's the cheapest I could find in the supermarket.
Don't tell other people that.
No, but if we look at it seriously, because I have done some research on this like last year or the year before, and paying off a mortgage, forgetting about the COVID-19 crisis right now, all right? So let's say last month, paying off a mortgage on the average priced home with the average size mortgage on an average income is easier today than it was back in my day. Because back in my day, we were paying 13, 14, 15% interest. So when you look at the percentage of the average Australian income going towards the mortgage repayment, it's actually lower now than it was many years ago. The big problem is the deposit. So even though when we bought our first home, we had to come up with a 20% deposit. So there was no mortgage insurance and you can come up with a 5% deposit or 10%, 20% deposit. Even though the deposit is 5% now, we had a lot more assistance back then. Like I remember, like our first home was in a country town in South Australia called Ardrossan, because that's where I got my first teaching job. And I remember the first homeowner's assistance was half of our deposit. Whereas today, like you fellas live in Melbourne and Sydney, let's say between the two of you, the median house price in Melbourne and Sydney is $800,000. And let's say a 10% deposit is $80,000. That would mean that, you know, the state government or the federal government would have to give you the equivalent of $40,000. That's just not going to happen. I do agree that it is harder to come up with a deposit than it was many years ago or for my generation. But once you've got that house or that unit, whatever it might be, especially when interest rates are 2 or 3%, it's a great opportunity to get into the market. And for that demographic like me, Jazz and David, who are listening, not your younger demographic, but for those mums and dads out there that are listening, and this is just my personal experience, right? So when we talk about the bank of mum and dad, the bank of mum and dad is not, in my case, I'm not giving them a grant, right? I'm giving them a loan. So what I've done with my kids, I've said, you come up with half of the deposit, I'll come up with the other half, and that'll kickstart you. And with one of my kids, I actually bought half the property as well. So it's an investment property. So we're both on the title. So I did give my kids a gift in that I'm willing to give them half of the deposit rather than go guarantor because I'm interested in tying up my assets. But as parents, we can assist our kids to give them a leg up. But once they're in the market, they will realise that in many cases, the mortgage is cheaper than the rent that they would pay, especially when interest rates are 2 and 3%.
With your research on gentrification, could you give us a bit of an early indications on what are the suburbs, because you mentioned suburb picking is important. Now, what are the early indicators of gentrification for a suburb? Could you share that with our listeners, please?
Sure. I wish I knew you was going to ask me that question, then I'd go back and check my research. But I'll give you some of the
highlights, sister.
Yeah, I'll give you some of the quantitative measures, all right, based on numbers. So if we're looking at, let's say if we're looking at the ABS,
yep.
You're looking at areas where the number of people under 18 is dropping faster than the state average. So gentrification is a childless process.
Right. Okay.
The number of couples without kids is increasing faster than the state average.
Is that because they have more discretionary spending?
Yeah.
Makes sense. Right. Yeah. Okay.
And the number of people that are new to the area in the last 5 years is also harsher than it is for the average of the state. So it's not like the people that live there in the long term gentrify the suburb. It's generally older people move out, young white-collar professionals move in. They have the money to fix up the houses, so property prices go up. So there's some of the quantitative indicators. Some of the more qualitative and fun indicators are where you see new yoga and Pilates studios pop up, where you see hipsters riding their fancy bikes.
Trendy coffee shops and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, some other little quirky things. But certainly, you know, I've been teaching in property for quite a long time, and I had picked many years ago as places like Erskineville and Enmore gentrifying. They've almost finished that gentrification process.
Yep.
Or places in Melbourne like Footscray and West Footscray, they've almost finished that gentrification process. But there are still opportunities in Melbourne. Maidstone and Braybrook, I like. Particularly for gentrification to occur, it's not going to occur in any suburb that's just old and waiting to be renewed, because urban renewal is something different. Gentrification is where people upgrade the existing older buildings. And for that, the two fundamentals are you need, number one, older buildings, period or character style buildings, and they need to be close to the city or close to the sea, but generally close to the city.
For capital growth, what will be your top two picks in Australia that you truly think that it has got solid potential in the next?
Okay. In Adelaide, it would be a suburb called Theberton, which is right next door to the city. It used to be an industrial suburb, but now young white collar professionals are moving in. There's the new hospital in the city is out the west end. So this is an inner western suburb. All right. So for me, it would be Theberton. Often interstate people call it the Barton, but it's actually pronounced Theberton. In Sydney, it's St. Peter's is one that I would be looking at. Melbourne I've already given. And, look, I haven't done the research on the other capital cities to give you any tips. But if you look at the fundamentals, it's undervalued suburbs, close to the city or the beach, with a high proportion of old-style buildings, and then you can go to the ABS and look at these stats or just go for a walk or a drive and have a look. Are these little pop-up bars or yoga studios or Pilates studios, are there blokes with Ned Kelly beards wearing skateboard helmets, riding non-racing bikes, you know, those ones with the fancy handlebars? You know, those sorts. I've written lots of articles on gentrification. If people are interested, they can just Google my name in gentrification and they'll find out what to look for.
So just one last one. In relation to the, I think what you've mentioned earlier, the low growth, I think, in my opinion, low growth, low inflation environment that we're moving forward with, right? Do you see this for the next 10, 20 years? And with so much debt that we're currently getting ourselves in, how do you see that the government's going to be able to get us out of this situation? Are they going to print more? Is that the only way that we're going to have to continue to inflate, so therefore the current debt is just become nothing? Or do you see any other ways?
I agree with you. I'm not the macroeconomist in the room. I'm a property economist. Any one of you study macroeconomics?
I think Jazz knows a lot more.
All right. So Jazz, correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't the bank said they want to borrow $390 billion from the reserve? The government has said they want to borrow $390 billion.
Yep.
And they're giving bonds to the reserve. The Reserve Bank of Australia printed $390 billion to give to the government, and here you go. You do with it as you wish. Right. So it's not like we owe some other countries $390 billion, is it?
We basically going to hyperinflate our currency at some point if we keep doing it. That's the negative of that, right?
Yeah.
Which will also affect the asset values, right? And at some point, if we push it too far, it's a funny money anyway, so it will become the currency will become worthless if we kept doing it. And if you look at this, Peter, the purchasing power, if you look at the over the last 100 years, right, what $100 used to purchase 10 years or 20 years ago doesn't do that anymore. So the currency power is slowly reducing, right? It's going down, basically.
Jazz, what happens when the rest of the world is doing exactly the same?
Well, see, this is why fiat is going to, at some point, become worthless. And if you notice, gold lately has been shooting up. There's a reason gold prices is just going up and up. And it's about to hit a new all-time high, a record high, once it passes, I think, 1900 or something. At the moment, it's sitting at 1700 an ounce US, by the way. So that's the reason these finite currencies will gain more power over infinite currencies, which is this dollar system or Venezuela, whatever, RMB, different ruble, all these. You can just print them out of thin air. If you've got a good printer, if that printer at the back is as good as central bank printer, you can print it tomorrow.
The thing is, very good.
Good.
Peter Currency.
The property is done, mate. We're done. It's boring. It's. I get tired of talking about it. Here's some interesting stuff.
You get tired of talking about property, do you, Jess? Are you living in a property at the moment, mate?
No, this is a tent.
it's one of those static backgrounds, isn't it? Push it over, like,
that's world. Right. Where you can select your own background.
Yeah, changing gears a little bit. What are the chances we are in a simulation, that this whole thing is a game? Us humans.
You've been watching too many Matrix films, mate.
What do you
That's
reckon?
That's exactly what another guest said last week.
Zero or 50? What's the number in your head?
Zero, mate. Zero.
Interesting. I won't go into why, because that will go on for longer.
Okay.
Moving on to the next one. Crypto, is it here to stay or a fad?
You're asking my opinion of somebody that doesn't really understand crypto. And I don't want to hurt your feelings, Jez. I think it's a fad.
Don't worry, 99% of the guests that we had on the show asked, the answer was the same as yours. So
okay.
I'm used to taking that one on me. Aliens, believer or not?
Aliens? No.
Don't believe in aliens?
No.
Why not? It's a big, big, big multiverse out there.
Well, I haven't actually seen one or met one yet, so... I had to believe in it.
Seen as believing.
How do you think AI will impact property? Have you done any study on that yet?
No. I'll leave that for the younger ones that are growing up with artificial intelligence.
Are you going to give me the name of a smart youngster who can tell me about that a little bit?
Just ask Siri.
Good one, mate.
Very good, David. Very good. Artificial intelligence is going to creep into many parts of our lives, and real estate is going to be one of them. But in the past, technology has been fantastic for us, and even though, you know, people aren't making fridges and shoes and clothes in Australia, they're working in other advanced industries. Is that just going to happen forever? I don't know.
Peter, it was awesome chat. Honestly enjoyed it. Like we were saying before, that book, we still haven't touched that, Property versus Share. That's the biggest debate that always goes on. And maybe we should do a conference call on that one with Roger Montgomery.
Just to take
a few punches and throw at the same time, too.
But the revised edition.
If you don't have time to read the whole book, if you go to the last page, it'll give you the answer.
Cool.
The answer is A.
So the last page is worth $30. Yeah. But I appreciate your time, mate. We'll work on a schedule maybe in the next week or two, whenever you've got some time, to discuss a bit more into property and shares and maybe some other chapters related to it. But do appreciate your time. And to our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. And if you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever app you're using, and let the word spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, Jazz and David. Bye.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.